We've made it to 20 episodes of Desert Talk. This is one of my, I think this is my favorite episode that I've done yet. This is only the second guest I've had on, and what a perfect, I couldn't ask for a better guest to have on in this nice round number of 20th episode of this podcast. It's great. I had my friend in town for the week. Her name is Christy Belich. She's another comedian, a fucking savage, according to Joey Diaz. And that's a compliment that can never be taken lightly. She's one of my favorite people that I have in my life. She's actually the person who talked me into, who suggested that Joshua Tree might be a good place for me to move to. And it was after having a conversation with her that I ultimately decided to just pack up my shit in New York. And 2 weeks after talking with her, I was out. I had decided I was committed to moving to Joshua Tree. And so she finally made it out to visit. And this conversation was really good. It was especially nice to connect with her again and spend all this time with her in the wake of the Kobe and Gigi tragedy that happened on Sunday. We went to the Comedy Store together. We did a bunch of stuff, and we talked with a bunch of people who mean a lot to each of us. And really, we sort of were able to harness, the comedy community in just who we spoke with. And harness was not the right verb, but we just had a really nice time just being a part of the comedy scene and trying to grow together as to be, to have stronger ties with each other and everybody else who we spoke with at the Comedy Store. Got to meet a bunch of other people. We talk about a lot of this in this this conversation we have coming up. I think you'll enjoy it. We did some shows together out in the desert, and we went for a hike. We went for a hike in Joshua Tree National Park. It was a really nice sort of spiritual healing that we had. She's moving into a new place, so it felt very right, everything that we experienced together in the last few days. Now I even decided to, just at the last minute on a whim, drive her back to LA. We'd initially left LA after going to the Comedy Store on Monday. And she had gotten a Greyhound bus ticket to go back. But that was supposed to be yesterday. And when I dropped her off at the Greyhound bus stop, I waited with her, to make sure that she got on the bus okay. And we saw the bus. It pulled off the exit from the 10 into and was, is supposed to come into the parking lot at the Shell station. That's where the Palm Springs Greyhound bus stop is. Doesn't make any sense, but that's how they set it up. We saw the bus, enter that area of Palm Springs and then just get right back on the freeway. It just didn't even stop. It just kept going. It made no sense, but we ultimately took it as a sign that, hey, well, I guess you're spending another day, another night in Joshua Tree. And then today I took her back to the bus stop, and ultimately I decided, I ain't got shit going on. If you want to buy me a tank of gas, then I'll just take you back to LA and we'll have a nice impromptu day trip. So here we are. We're now at the Lyric Hyperion Theater, where we're getting some work done for our freelance gigs. And I'm recording the intro for this podcast. You're going to enjoy it. This is my favorite episode to date. I think you will too. See ya. All right. So we got our tea going. We just did a spot at the Red Barn in Palm Desert. Christy Belich, it is so wonderful to have you here.
Thanks for having me, John.
I know. It's so funny. You're the second friend I've had visit me in the desert. And you're such a way better guest than my other friend that I had here, who I also love quite a bit, but he wasn't quite as, having him here wasn't quite as conducive to comedy as you are. So it's wonderful. We're here. We're drinking some stress relief tea from Yogi. Please sponsor me and sponsor Christy too. Cause, oh man.
What does your tea say? I haven't read my message yet.
Okay. I just read this.
What is your
say? So on Yogi tea, it's really wonderful. They have little, like, you don't need fortune cookies. If you want your fortune read, you can just have tea from Yogi. And my tea says, "You are equally as beautiful as the universe," which is weird because I feel like that kind of applies to you.
That's kind of a summary of the desert.
Mm. Yeah.
You're equally as beautiful as the universe.
I mean, we're also like all a part of the universe. So it's, in effect, it's really just a fancy way of saying we're all the same. We're not. None of us are more special than another. We're just, you know, it's a unifying message that if you want to be a fucking dick about it and, you know, try to virtue signal or something, you can just be like, "You're equally as beautiful as the universe." And instead of just saying, "We're all the fucking same, get over it. Get over yourself."
Your tea is telling you you're beautiful. So you have to thank your tea for telling you that.
Thank you, tea. My tea's really fucking hot. Like, do you see this shit? Oh my God. Fucking steam show.
Well, I'm steaming my face right now with the tea.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it feels good because it keeps your voice from going raspy.
Ah, it's like a sauna in my hand.
Yeah, it's really good. It steams up your glasses, but it keeps your throat feeling good.
We wear,
same glasses.
I was about to say we wear the same glasses, except like we totally don't.
But yours is Ray-Ban and mine is Medicaid. Mine is the government bought me glasses. Thank you, Maryland. Thank you, Depression. Depression bought me these glasses.
Oh my God.
Your air just went off.
That's the sound that my fridge makes when it gets needy. It's such a fucking needy cunt, my fridge. But it's wonderful to have you here with your tea and your government glasses.
Thank you. And
your wonderful porridge. Government face.
More porridge, please. More porridge.
Well, so what does your tea bag say? Teabag yourself. Teabag this podcast.
It's you know that you're so gay that you're gonna get married in Joshua Tree Park to your friend.
Wouldn't that be something? Oh my God!
It says that you're gonna gay marry your friend for so he can have a green card.
Well, he's already got the green card, but. It would be, I guess, insurance.
It says live light, travel light, spread the light, and be the light.
I think that is quite accurate. It suits you.
Yeah. And what was your word of the day on Words with Friends?
Yeah, that's right. 2 o'clock every day, I get a notification from Words with Friends that says a word of the day. And today's word was love, which is something that I think we've all been feeling, especially in Southern California, LA area specifically. I drove out yesterday to see you at the Comedy Store. You weren't booked there, but we met up and we got to hang out with a bunch of other comics and watch Kill Tony and hope to get on. We didn't, but it was a really wonderful time, and especially in the wake of the Kobe Bryant tragedy and all that. I mean, LA is I've never seen people care for each other in that way, like not since, you know, 9/11 really, which is a pretty intense comparison, but it felt accurate.
Here's what I love, okay? Because we now have our family at the Comedy Store that meets Are you going to be out there every Monday?
Just about, I think.
So we meet pretty much every Monday to do to sign up for Potluck, which is the open mic, and then to sign up for Kill Tony.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, when we stood in line, because they normally put the line out on the side of the belly room, they put us in line for Kill Tony in the front, because I guess, was it because Bob Saget was there?
It's so weird because, like,
they've never done that before.
That's such a weird thing. Like, Bob Saget, yeah, he's a big deal, but, like, they've had other great guests on Kill Tony before, and, like, who gives a it's not the 90s. Who gives a fuck about Bob Saget? I mean,
I don't know why they did it.
But it seemed weird.
It was weird.
You know,
unless they were filming and they had to rope off something, but I didn't see any cameras.
I mean, I saw they had two cameras in there, but I figured, like, that just looks like a typical, you know, setup that you would have at a big deal podcast like Kill Tony. They had two cameras set up and they had the front tables roped off, but I think that's just a standard practice for the show.
They were also very, very, I almost said hella. Where the fuck did that come from?
You ain't in the Bay Area, that, you know. You ain't some hyphy bitch, you know. I haven't said the word hyphy since like I started smoking pot in high school, thanks to my friend from the Bay Area who visited me a couple weeks ago.
It could have been because they were super sold out because they kept kicking comics out to put people in.
Yeah, and it was weird that people kept showing up like more than halfway through Kill Tony. Like, who the fuck does that? Who shows up like late to a podcast taping and then also orders a drink like just when they're about to bring people their checks? Well, it seems inconsiderate by the patrons.
I think what it was people, because I was at the improv the night before, because Sunday night's the improv mic,
mm-hmm.
and the line was around the door. Like, normally it's not like that. So I think it's because of what happened with the helicopter crash. People just needed comedy yesterday.
Isn't that wild? I mean, like, it's one thing to, you know, to, like, go out and see comedy because, like, you know, you're dealing with some shit and you're just like, all right, I just need to take my mind off of it. But to, like, have so many people all feeling the same thing, it's pretty fucking magical for comedians. Like, it's sort of a reminder, like, hey, you're not doing this just because you want to shock people. Like, you want to bring people joy when they need it most. And, like, yesterday was a pretty good reminder.
William Montgomery made my day yesterday.
Oh my God, William Montgomery is fucking hilarious.
He was with what was that guy's name?
Matt McCarthy. And it's so funny because Matt McCarthy is the guy who ultimately made me think that I could do stand-up comedy. Because I saw this guy, like, Matt McCarthy is, like, he's done stand-up. I think he's done improv. And he's done a ton of commercials. He's made money. And but I saw him host a show at Joe's Pub in New York City in the fall of 2008. I went to the show because I saw Eugene Merman was on it, and the tickets were only $10. And then that's also where I saw Hannibal Buress for the first time. And it was just, yeah, it was a great show. Matt McCarthy hosted, and he fucking bombed. Ate shit so much that I learned his name and then thought, I can do stand-up comedy. I was 18 and way fucking naive, but he planted that seed inadvertently. It wasn't his night, but, you know, maybe one day when if I make it or whatever, or if I just meet him, I'll tell him, hey, you're why I started doing this, and thank you for, you know, like, here, I'm the silver, your silver lining to that horrible set.
it felt so good to laugh that hard.
Yeah. And also it was just there was a lot of support from other comics, for each other.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've only been to the store once before, And it was, and like that was, you know, I didn't know what to expect and I was very insecure and I didn't really talk to anybody. When I saw I didn't get on potluck, I left the store. So, I didn't get to really feel that vibe. I didn't talk with anybody except for, one friend who I knew that was there, you know, my first time at the store a year ago. But then last night was just such a different experience. There were a whole bunch of people that, you know, there were a couple of people that we knew. Mm-hmm. We knew your friends, Nikki and, Julianne.
Yeah.
And Tracy. And then Fiona Reed, saw her. And then we get to meet, that guy, Saul Trujillo.
Yeah.
Fucking cool ass road comic and really nice guy. And then William Montgomery, it was fucking great.
Well, you know what? Okay. So it's a testament to, the Kill Tony line went around the front, and we comics who make the show at Kill Tony. I already told you this, but it really kind of, I haven't seen this in a long time in this way. Kill Tony runs on comics. Like, you need comics to be on stage, but because the room was so full and sold out, I guess they oversold maybe tickets. Comics couldn't get in to sit, and they were calling comedians' names. And so people had their iPhones on YouTube to see who they were calling. And as people were being called, people were yelling down the line, "Hey, where's Bob Smith? Where's, mm-hmm. you know?"
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first guy who went cool. on, the first guy who went on last night, was one of those people.
Yeah.
And like you could tell, I mean, he bombed. He didn't do great at all. But
he ran in. Yeah.
And he still had the live stream going on his phone, so they could hear it while he was on stage, which was funny for the interview portion. There, it's like, are you live streaming this podcast?
Because they didn't know what was going on until one of the door guys told them.
Yeah, and but it was cool to have that moment happen, because like there became an even deeper understanding, you know, not only just the open micers who were lining up around the door, but like it was it got everybody sort of on the same page with Tony Hinchcliffe and his guests, Bob Saget and Doug Benson. It was
it felt good.
It did. There was a really supportive energy last night, just across the board. And you could just tell, like, the store, like, this is the first time I've been at the store where I felt comfortable, you know, because I knew you and I knew Fiona and, you know, saw a bunch of other people. Well, I mean, like, we started talking with Ian Russo, who I had seen in passing several times before. And I had never had a conversation with him, but then I don't know if he's just, you know, changed as a person, because it's been several months since I last saw him and never talked with him. But then yesterday we talked at length, you know, and it was clear like everybody was trying to heal from the Kobe thing. And it's so weird because like I'm not even a basketball guy. I had no idea how much his death and his daughter and everything and the other seven people on the plane or on the helicopter, I didn't realize how much that would affect me and actually the entire city of LA and the surrounding area. It's crazy.
It was felt like when I saw you before we got to the store, like when I got into the car, I mm-hmm. was like, you feeling it? And you're like, oh man, like you could feel it on the streets, like just being in LA.
Well, I was, you know, maybe 10 minutes away from picking you up at La Brea and Sunset. And I was at the stoplight at Amoeba, and I saw a guy tagging the side of the building, you know, black spray paint, Kobe and Gigi. And then he had, hearts around it. And it was, I mean, it was a pretty shoddy graffiti job, but it was just like, it was necessary. And I wanted to honk at the guy, but I didn't because I didn't want to cause a scene and potentially say, you know, because when you honk, you're sending mixed messages. Like, I don't want it to be taken the wrong way. Like, hey, you scoundrel, you're defacing a blank building. Like, I felt it, and I was hoping that the guy would make eye contact with me so I could, just give him like a, I don't know, like a wave, because it felt right.
And we were with at the Red Barn show tonight.
Yeah, the Red Barn show tonight was different, very different energy, but it was, why don't you give your take on it? You've never been out to do comedy in Palm Desert.
No, but it was just interesting because it was like the producer of the show, Brandon Taylor, like he was talking about how, I don't want to like blow up his like life, but he was like talking about how the last 2 days have been really, been really, really hard for him because of this, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's interesting because, you know, comedy is the overall healer, and that's why we need it. That's why we do it, because ultimately we understand pain from a fundamental place. But yeah, being in Palm Desert is incredible. I mean, you and I went on a hike today.
Yeah.
And what's the section?
So we went to Black Rock Canyon in Joshua Tree National Park, and we did the High View Nature Trail, where we get to, you know, climb up, I think, the equivalent of like 40 stories or something. Like if you look in your health app on the iPhone, it'll estimate how many floors you climbed, and it'll make you feel really accomplished when you see it. But it was beautiful, and we had a moment, there was a bench, like almost at the top, where we just we sat down because we just, it's when there's a bench, you just gotta sit, you know. And so we sat there for like probably 15 minutes or so, just sort of just taking it all in and really sort of getting in tune with where we both were emotionally.
Yeah. I mean, the place that you live in is really, really healing. I have to put this up or else I'm going to lose my voice, but, it's just, there's a specific energy to the desert that is you can't describe it.
Yeah.
And it's the same like with mountains, but the desert specifically, it's like so magical, and it's really, that's the only word that, like you were saying.
I was saying last night, like, it's so bizarre how there's a really consistent adjective that people use to describe the desert, and that adjective is magical. It's not even because people have heard other people say it necessarily. It's just, that's what you feel when you're out here.
It's really it. And the Joshua trees out here have, every last one of them has their own like specific personality almost, or their own specific uniqueness.
Oh, I mean, there are no two Joshua trees that look alike. It doesn't exist. They're like, if you were to turn fingerprints into succulents, that's what Joshua trees are, except they look way fucking cooler than fingerprints. Like,
and I wonder, it's so interesting to me because we are in Trump country. I'm very used to Trump country. And we just went to Palm Desert, which is like near Palm Springs.
Yep.
Is that the same thing?
It's not the same thing, but it is close to it. Palm Desert has, I honestly don't know enough about Palm Desert to really make a comparison to Palm Springs that I'd feel comfortable with. But I'll put it like this. Palm Desert is where the Queens of the Stone Age are from. And Palm Springs is West Hollywood in the desert. So they're different in that regard, that Palm Desert seems to be a little rougher around the edges, although it's still where a lot of rich people live
And Palm Springs is like the rich people without the good music.
I mean, the show, so to me, the show felt like, you know, doing shows in West Virginia and doing shows in deep, deep, deep South Virginia.
Yeah.
But what you were saying, you know, there's so much potential out here. I feel the energy out here.
Mm-hmm.
I love that it's so close to Los Angeles. I think it's like you're on the brink of this scene popping. And I think I really feel that.
Yeah. Well, because this scene, from my understanding, has only been in existence for maybe a year, probably less than. Like, so there's an open mic at the Hood Bar. It's in Palm Desert. It's a few blocks down from the Red Barn. So the open mic is on Wednesdays, and it used to be mostly a music mic, and occasionally a comic or two would go up and, you know, try to do material. Probably wouldn't go over well because music crowds, comedy crowds, very different. Now it's turned into like 90% comics and then maybe a couple musicians, to the point now where a lot of musicians are saying, fuck this place, which, you know, is okay because there are so many more music mics around, just around the area. And like, we really need a home for comedy, and the Hood Bar and Pizza is a great place for it. We have so many, we have a lot of promising comics out here, and also, promising bookers, which is kind of fascinating. You know, 'cause to me, it seems, it wasn't until I got here that I ever heard of somebody who seems more interested in booking shows and producing shows than being on shows. And being funny, being like, hey, I'm the star of this. It's like, no, we want to get people out here and like turn this into a fucking cool scene. It seems like we're all hands on deck here.
Yeah, you've got something great going on here.
Mm-hmm. And that was another thing about going to the store last night. Just talking with all these new people, you know, I've never met before, and they have made, you know, if not a career for themselves in comedy, they've made a lifestyle out of it, and they want to get out. They want to go to new places. And I'm just like, hey, we got a scene in Palm Desert just 2.5 hours away. Let's get in touch so I can, you know, feed you to the bookers and get you on some shows. It's not a bad drive. And everybody is excited to do it. Fiona Reed had been out here a month or two ago. And had a good time and wants to come out again. And then the other people we're talking to, Saul and William Montgomery and a handful of others whose names I forget at the moment. They were all interested in like, oh fuck, there's a scene. They want to at least check it out.
Yeah. It's just reassuring to know that this is here because I miss, it's hard when you're in LA and you want stage time and there's this, you know, you do have to grind for stage time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a relief to know that at least a couple times a month I could get on a bus, come out here.
Yep.
Do a long set, you know.
And what I like about it out here is that there's a lot more room to explore when you're on stage. Whereas in LA, I mean, you're fucking lucky if you get on a show to begin with. And it seems like the stakes are so much higher there because, you know, you don't know who's in the audience. There might be an agent or a booker or somebody who, you know, they might be taking notes. And if you suck, fuck off, fridge. Like if this fucking prima donna over here.
Maybe your fridge is saying, don't worry about that. 'Cause remember what your tea said.
Oh yeah. Right.
That you're beautiful.
You are equally as beautiful as the universe. Yeah. And my fridge is part of the universe. It's just,
And so are the bookers that are potentially look.
Yeah.
You can, it takes a brave person to, like we were talking earlier, to even fucking go to the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
because it's scary there.
It is intimidating.
It's not easy. And, you know, I didn't grow up thinking I'd be a comic. You know, I thought that was for Robin Williams, like who I saw on Mrs. Doubtfire when I was a kid. You know, so here we are at one of the, at the greatest comedy club in the world.
The most legendary, most hallowed for sure.
Yeah, I'm partial. I think it's the greatest comedy club in the world. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing the greatest comedians. Like we saw a comedian we love yesterday at the bar. We're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know?
Bobby Lee.
And it was like, I froze up because, you know, here's somebody we see during our childhood, like,
yeah,
on TV all the fucking time.
I mean,
it's crazy.
It is. It's, it is such a magical place. And like, you know, usually like when I have to go to the bathroom in public, like I get stage fright. And I had no qualms about pissing at the Comedy Store. Like, I just fucking unzipped and went. And, like, that hasn't happened for years, like, decades.
Wait,
like,
you had a problem peeing at the Comedy Store?
No, I didn't. And that was such a trip. It was.
Oh, you thought you were?
I assumed I probably would because, you know, because I get stage fright pretty easily. It's a thing with guys at the urinal.
Piss fright.
Well, yeah, stage fright, they call it.
For peeing?
Yeah, like because sometimes, you know, because, like, as a woman, you have it so much better than us in the bathroom. Because, like, you get a stall and a door, and, you know, whereas, like, dudes, we're generally getting a trough. And
I don't have a dick.
I'm aware that, like, we have it better, like, in basically every other realm, but it's like, but it was just such a different feeling. Like, and this is just a very weird analogy, or not analogy, but an indicator of how great the Comedy Store is. Like I could just piss freely there. It was really nice.
It's good to know.
Yeah. I mean, having a divider between urinals helped, but
one day you're going to see. Wait, Ivan, okay. I'm not going to blow up the bit that you're doing now.
I'm not doing a bit. It's fine. I'm riffing.
But one day you're going to pee at the Comedy Store, and one of your favorite comics is going to come in and pee next to you, and you're going to, like, have a pee moment with them.
But that will never top my pee moment with Bartolo Colon, favorite baseball player of all time. Thank you for that setup.
You're welcome. I was just looking out for a bitch. You know what I'm saying?
Looking out for a bit or a bitch or both.
A bitch.
Okay, a bit. Yeah. Thanks.
I was looking out, boo.
but you know, because you were saying that the Comedy Store is a spiritual vortex. It is. And I felt that in the bathroom. You know, like in cinematography, bathrooms are a place of vulnerability and you know, in cinematography.
Glory holes exist.
Yeah, you should, speaking of glory holes, you should see the men's room at the Red Barn because the urinal there is just a hollowed out beer keg.
Oh,
so they just like put a urinal cake inside and ice. And so you're just supposed to piss into this keg and like it's only hollowed out enough so that you can just basically put your dick in it and then like you can't see where you're pissing or anything. Like you're just really trusting the process.
Whoa.
It's a trip, but it was great to see that I didn't piss all over the floor. That was somebody else. We're reaching the half hour recording limit on this segment. So I'm going to stop real quick and then start it up again. And we're back after the recording limit / pee break.
Yes.
And I got to check some Instagram stories and waste some time. And here we are. We're back at it after the show at the Red Barn.
So I wanted to ask you a question.
Okay.
What was your spiritual insight when at the park?
My spiritual insight was that I've been a storyteller my whole life. Like from when I was four through, I mean, there are so many different instances I have of telling stories that got reactions from people. You know, I was 4 years old and I told this story about how there was this man in the elevator when we were living in New York City. I was 4 years old and there was this guy in the elevator in New York City and he farted in the elevator, crowded elevator. And this guy who farted goes, "Excuse me, I'm so sorry." And it just got the biggest laugh out of like everybody in the room, and it's great because there were kids and their parents who all heard that story and they were just like, "This is great. What a little, you know, a charming little boy Jonathan is." And I had like these wonderful, like curly blonde locks. And, I had my first bomb when I was in third grade. I told the story about how I was on a business trip with my dad and I ran into a glass door. I didn't see that it was glass. Like a fucking bird. I just ran full speed into a glass door and got a bloody nose. And it freaked me out. I had a bloody noses before, but it freaked me out because I thought that I had gotten a cut in my nose or like just outside my nose. Like it was like you could just see this, this thin slit where just blood was coming out and everything. Turned out to be a bloody booger. Because I then pulled on it and just like the whole fucking thing. And that freaked me out. And then when I told it in class the next week, I thought like, guys, right? Am I right? Like, this is kind of cool actually. And third grade teacher called home.
What?
Yeah. You talk about snowflakes now. This guy was a snowflake before it was cool. Like my third grade teacher, he's a lovely guy. And I've actually talked with him recently because he's in the amateur radio club with my dad. he called home. Like I was disciplined a lot that year, actually. My parents got a lot of calls home. Just like, you know, and it'd be like, "Hey, you know, Jonathan's been running around and being really inappropriate. Just talking about boogers and a lot of other inappropriate things." Just like
a bloody booger.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty significant.
You used alliteration in your first stand-up act in front of what grade was it?
Third. I was eight.
Third grade.
I'm a fucking 8-year-old, and I know what makes a good bit.
Yeah. Fuck that teacher. He doesn't know what he's doing. He should, you know, be fired.
I think he retired recently in good standing. Which I'm happy for. He was a good teacher by and large, but he was very quick to look out for offended people.
Bloody boogers should be a band name.
It could be
the Bloody Boogers.
Yeah, I mean, but like I have so many other like just dozens of other amazing band names. but yeah, it could be a band name. And not a bad one at that.
It's like, I like when sometimes when kids take boogers out of their nose and they'll be like these long slime things, like almost like a slug. But have I yet to see a bloody booger? Nope.
Right. I mean, this thing was full red. I mean, like this looks like some.
A period out your nose.
Thank you for saying that because I was about to say like, you know, extremely dischargey period, but I don't quite know what that entails because I don't have that.
It entails screaming and a lot of chocolate.
Okay, minus the chocolate, then I totally get it. Because I was screaming. I was freaking out.
Yeah, that was a bloody business trip. It was
bloody hell.
Yeah, right. Because it also, that business trip also entailed another bleeding out of another hole. I bled out of my dick because my dad whipped me with a towel.
And you just sound like you're getting abused right now.
Well, what's funny is that at the time,
are you Catholic?
No, it's it was hilarious because like after my dad towel whipped me.
That sounds so wrong. Like this.
Well, I mean, cause, you know, because like in the locker room, like guys will, you know, snap each other with towels. But the thing is, you're supposed to like turn your hips at each other so that you don't get snapped in just on the dickhead. But I was there just like, I don't know what I'm doing. And my dad's like, I do. Bam. And
whoa.
Granted, he didn't mean to do that. But then after I was just like screaming in the hotel room at like the, I think it was the Quality Inn in Spokane, Washington. He was just like, Jonathan, you're really gonna have to do me a favor here. Stop screaming, because if they hear you screaming and they're gonna think that I'm abusing you and that I hurt you. I'm just like, you did hurt me. It's like, it was a total lose-lose. Like, we're really lucky that child abuse is super common in Eastern Washington, therefore nobody batted an eye.
At the Quality Inn, I'm at the Hotel Motel,
where we towel whip, dick snap, abuse your kid.
Standard practices.
Yep.
What's your dad's name?
Dana. If telemarketers call him Donna, because they assume it's a chick when he answers, he's got a high pitched voice.
So Donna Hanford, look, we gotta talk. We gotta do some EFT tapping. Recreate the scenario so that John, what's your biggest fear? Can pee at the Comedy Store. This is why you probably have pissing problems.
It's actually not. The reason I have pissing problems, it's pretty clear. When I was in fifth
grade. Being dick whipped by your dad at the age of whatever.
Yeah, you know, eight years old, and I realized, like, oh my god, I can bleed out of my dick? What? It didn't occur to me.
I've been bleeding out of my dick for a long time, son.
See, I am a feminist. It's like, you don't know what it's like to bleed. I'm just like, yeah, I do. It fucking hurts. It's the worst thing. And then, like, my dad tries to cheer me up by taking me to an amusement park and going on a roller coaster. And that just, like, all the whiplash from the rides only made it hurt worse, because it took a few days.
It's a really relatable story. It's really relatable. I've never heard this kind of stuff ever from a comic ever. I've never heard about anything related to dicks, balls, boogers, cum, assholes. I've never heard these things.
Okay, but bleeding out of your dick hole, that is a first. That has to be.
Well, you know, there's like parasites in like different places of the planet. I'm sure they're here too.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes her name is Donna Hanford and just fucking ruins people's lives. I'm joking, Dad.
Yeah, Donna. I'm sure you're really nice. I'm sure you rock. Does Donna listen to this?
No, but she's a really sweet lesbian. She wears a lot of flannel tucked into jeans.
So
my dad/lesbian mom has no style whatsoever, nor does he or she care. Oh my god, I've never busted on my dad so hard in a podcast, but it's really fun.
He deserves it. I know. He told him to stop yelling.
Yeah, yeah. Stop yelling, because people will think I hurt you or abuse you. You fucking did. You made me bleed out of my dick. No other man is ever going to have this kind of past trauma.
Well, I mean, you're still young, so you might meet a nice gentleman at the keg stand pissort one day, and that might happen.
Oh my god.
When you get gay married in Joshua Tree to Jerry Garcia, that first night when he, because I assume he's a top.
You know, I think he might be a switch.
He's a switch?
Because I think we're both switches.
Oh, you're versatiles.
Yeah, we're versatiles.
I really think you guys are going to get gay married one day.
It would be nice. Just for the security of companionship. And you really should stop saying gay married. The correct term is same-sex marriage.
Oh, fucking y'all and your bullshit. Okay. Right, fine.
It would be a really pragmatic same-sex marriage.
It would be so sweet, and then that you can, I guess, both bleed out your dicks after that.
I'll for the honeymoon, I'll just send him and my dad on a trip to Spokane, Washington at the Quality Inn.
Sweet. I approve. So wait, this is the spiritual insights we've had at Joshua Tree?
Oh, yeah, right. So it started with me being like, realizing that I'm a storyteller. And then it's devolved into bleeding out my dick.
That's
at 8 years old. It's a great story.
It's a funny story.
And but then there was some other spiritual insights that I should maybe to make money and also get stage time. Start booking funerals to be a Googleizer.
That's a really
to give eulogies, because I give great fucking eulogies. I speak from the heart, and I mean, because I've given great eulogies at both of my grandma's memorial services. The first one, I didn't cry at all. I was 10, and you know,
heathen, terrible person you are.
No, it was because my paternal grandma died of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, so mad cow. For those of you who don't know what Creutzfeldt-Jakob is,
wait. You didn't tell me this. How?
I didn't. Well, so how did I not tell you? Or
yeah, how? Why? Why did you skip that?
Well, because the story itself that I told was funnier. You know, I got on a stage I spoke in front of the church at the memorial service to remember the pastor or the Father Joseph was his name, and he asked if anybody from the family wanted to come up and say some words. So I said, yes, I would like to do that. I'm 10 years old, fifth grade. And I said, you know, when I think of May, that was my grandma's nickname. We never called her grandma. We only called her May. Very Midwestern thing of her. She's, you know, from Missouri, and met my grandpa in Kansas. And so she had a nickname, May, and her Honda Civic, this old fucking beater, rusty, had just so many problems. Like we'd have to reach.
It's not good.
I got plantain chips if you want. her car was the Maymobile, and, it was such a weird, like, she was not a good driver. She would drive 60 miles an hour on the back roads and 20 on the highway. And one day, my mom and I are stuck in traffic, and we're just like, the fuck is this? Like, it's the middle of the day on a weekend. Like, there shouldn't be rush hour traffic or anything. But then as we saw, you know, the leader of the caravan approaching the curve, we see, wait, that's the Maymobile. May is driving and she's holding up traffic. and I told the story way better when I was 10. It was fresher in my mind. And the whole church just started laughing. It was what everybody needed to hear. Cause the people who were at the memorial, everybody was shocked because, just a year before that, you know, like May was, she had her health problems. She, you know, had bipolar disorder. and just was not healthy. You know, she smoked and everything. But what's so crazy about Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease is that in June of 2000, she was still driving. Not well, but she was still able to get behind the wheel of a car and drive places, run errands and stuff, and we didn't have to worry. By July, she was like, she had to have a full-time caretaker. By September, she was in the nursing home, and then she died in the first week of February 2001.
How did she get it?
We don't know. And ultimately we never got a 100% confirmation that that she had Creutzfeldt-Jakob, because the University of Washington botched the autopsy. They somehow, or it was either them. We were told it was them by my grandpa, but knowing my grandpa, he's a very non-confrontational guy, and he might be somebody, might have been somebody who would prefer just not to, like, she's gone, there's no point in knowing the truth. So we think he might have just said, you know, forget it, we'll just cremate her and that's that.
Yeah.
But according to my my dad's first cousin, who's a doctor in San Diego and very well respected in his field, he said there's no way it couldn't have been Creutzfeldt-Jakob. Like, you don't see such a rapid decline like that from baseline to full on Alzheimer's like dementia. It was just so
wasn't 2001 it was like prevalent
meat. Yeah. There was like a scare about, I think that there were some cases in Australia, I want to say, but there weren't any cases in the US. So it would be weird that, so it was weird that all of a sudden my grandma never traveled anywhere, but she, you know, ate a lot of beef, drank tons of milk, that she would all of a sudden come down with these exact symptoms. And so we don't know if it came from anything, you know, like that, if it's because she ingested something or if it's a hereditary thing. We don't know.
That's for sure. So interesting. It's fascinating. It's interesting because the people I know, you're from Washington.
Yep.
There's a lot of interesting friends that I've had that have had stories like this in Washington that are like these unexplainables.
That's so weird.
And Washington, to me, is kind of like one of those places that would have that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's where Twilight takes place in Forks. Well,
yeah. I mean, I'm sorry about your grandma. I mean, but the thing is, like, that's the kind of stuff we were talking about. Like, this is exactly what, if you're afraid to hold back on stage, like, don't be, because, like, you have a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Well, most importantly, the reason I felt compelled to talk about this today, or that just came up, is because we were talking about, you know, the whole, all the fallout from the Kobe Gigi tragedy, and just how, because I mean, that's, you know, maybe not as unexpected, or maybe it's a little more unexpected than my grandma's disease, but just by being able to have that funny story be told at her memorial, it really lightened the mood. It brought people joy when they needed it most. And so it's been a really emotional 48 hours, and it'll probably continue, you know, the rest of the week. And you know, there's going to be a point when we go back to normal and be shitty again. But I really hope that at least when we revert back, we're sort of pushing the dial more toward a compassionate, a compassionate baseline for comics and just for people in general interacting and having a sense of community.
I think it's going to get good. I have a feeling, I have a good feeling about all of us that we have out here. Cause now we have a family out here, and it's small, but it's mighty. And I think there's a reason we're all here right now.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I told you I took acid in New York City.
Yeah.
I walked around by myself. I didn't want to be around any fucking body.
Oh my God. And then I told you, like, yeah, I had the same thing. My first time taking acid in New York City.
And as much as I don't like acid as much as I like mushrooms, mm-hmm. Or at least you said try it again.
But. Yeah, it's been a completely different experience ever since that first shitty time.
I wouldn't mind doing that here. Mm-hmm. In a place where it's a little bit different, you know, calmer.
Oh, hun, yeah.
But, you know, I walked around and the message that I got from acid was like, it's done. Like, you don't need to be here anymore. Mm-hmm. You've done your contract here. Like, it's time to go and do your work that you really want to do.
Yeah.
So, and astrologically, like, that aligns with what's going on in the universe right now, or in this, you know, in our little bubble in this, mm-hmm. you know, but
perhaps a microverse
or yeah. Who knows what's fucking going on, but it makes sense. And I think being here, you know, I was out the last time I was in 29 Palms and Joshua Tree was really hard.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really hard time, and it's interesting to be here now because it's like the reverse of that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like cool to be here.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's been magical having you, and yeah, there is just, please come visit me in the desert, people. Like, this is
yeah, come visit John. It's a really great place.
Yeah, it's there's so much to do, just. You got to really trust your own mind to make that reality, yeah, it's just great. It's so funny. We said in the car on the way back here, like
15,
yeah, 15, maybe 20 minutes, and here we are at 53 minutes. it's been so fun.
It's been cool. Yeah, I appreciate being here because I feel good. And I feel like I'm at home in California. Like, finally, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm at home.
Same. And I mean, also, like, I'd be remiss if, I mean, like, I will mention this in the intro when I record it. But I mean, you were the one that suggested Joshua Tree as a place for me to move. You said it lined up well with my chart. And I was just like, you know, look, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I'm 28 at the time and trying to, you know, feel my way through life, and I need a change. And I just went for it. And I've never made a better decision in my life. So thank you for planting that seed.
Uh-huh. Don't thank me, but I'll take it. I'll take it, dude. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I think this is the best episode I've ever had.
LOL.
Episode 20 in the books.
20.
All right, guys. And so, Christy, you should probably plug your social and your podcast and just where can people check you out?
Actually, I do need to move some tickets.
Mm.
I need some movie tickets. My podcast is Solar Plexus and Chill. It's also on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes. You can find me on Instagram, Trust Your Glitter, Christy Belich on Twitter and the Facebook. But I do need to move some tickets. On the 22nd of February, I will be at the Sycamore Tavern. And I really need to sell these tickets because Mama needs to get on there. So please come see me at the Sycamore Tavern. Show's at 7:30. I'd love to see everybody there. And I'll have more dates on Instagram as it comes along.
What date is the Sycamore Tavern?
22nd of February.
February 22nd. You got plenty of time to get these tickets, but you should get them soon. That way, you know, we have more security. They're going to buy tickets.
Please buy tickets.
Buy them. Fucking Sycamore Tavern. This huge. It's a great place. And she's a great comic. She fucking crushed it tonight when the room was absolute trash. So
no. Never blame the room.
Okay, but I will nonetheless. Thank you for listening to Desert Talk. This has been so much fun. And check Christy out. Bye.
Bye.